It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
We are back here on the morning shift in our 7 o'clock hour, and it is brought to you by Zero Res Smart, lasting clean. All right, so the Falcons coming off a loss to the Saints. They do get the Denver Broncos this weekend, but what do you need to see corrected? Maybe some of those missed opportunity things that the players talked about prior to going into this weekend.
Yeah, and I know there's people out there that are saying, well, just simple, just make your field goals. But as much yardage as you feel like you compiled, I don't think it's that simple. I think you have to be better in specific situations. You and I talked about, and the Falcons ended up scoring on fourth down on the goal line, but you and I have talked about throughout the year, and we've talked about it, I've talked about with Goforth and postgame a number of times, it almost feels like the Falcons at times have gotten lucky not to be in short yardage situations more. It's like you when your team gets down to the goal line, a lot of times you're like, on the goal line, about to do it. This is the kind of team that I'd rather be at like the 7 than the goal line. We do not do goal line things very well. We're not mobile at the quarterback position. We don't block north and south very well. And you had to eventually get Bijan in there on the fourth down to be able to convert that. There's simple situations such as that throughout this game. Pass protection against Chase Young. Bijan not tripping up Caleb McGarry. We talked about yesterday with Arch. Just small things like that throughout the game. You feel like jumped up and bit you. I don't know if it's one category you can point to.
Yeah, I can't remember probably the last time I had real confidence in us coming off the ball and winning a short yardage was your rookie year when you had Harvey Dahl.
I don't know that we were very good at it then.
I thought that team was. That was 10, and that team was pretty good because that was when Turner was in his prime, and I felt like you had Blaylock. You had
I just remember us being. I remember us being towards the lower end of the NFL in terms of being able to stop and being able to run short yardage that year.
11. Now 11 was the year I remember where it all went down because that was the year after, and you didn't re-sign Harvey Dahl.
Harvey. Yep.
And so that was the year that I felt like, because I remember in that Giants playoff game, there was a 24-2 or whatever.
That was ugly.
Yeah. And you couldn't. We went for fourth down multiple times in New York territory. Remember, the weather was really, really cold, and I think was it windy? Wasn't it windy for that game?
It was rainy, overcast. I never forget. We got back the next day. I went to clean out my locker, and a police officer pulled me over in the Falcons training facility, Flowery Branch PD. Gave me a ticket. I was so upset with that guy. I was like, "Come on, man! You know I've had a bad day.
I had a bad week.
You know we've had a rough day here, man. Come on."
Yeah, I remember doing pre and post for that game. I was producing it then, and. Yeah, it was.
That was ugly.
It was just because we used to do the pregames in Taco Max, and I remember we went to Dantana's for like lunch, and I was like in a back room watching the game at Dantana's, and I just remember being like, "This is so
bad. As ugly as it gets, man."
Because that was right across the street from the old station, but that's why there was a situation, and I can't remember. I think it was 3rd and 2. It might have been 3rd and 1. It was early in the game, and we threw instead of ran. And I just remember, and this was this week against New Orleans, and I just remember thinking, I'd like to have seen us run the ball there. And then you fast forward it to the goal line where it's 1st and 1, 2nd and 1, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1. And I go, okay, now I know why we threw it there, because they just don't have confidence in it.
Yeah. They did run the ball well, at least 181 yards rushing. Bijan Robinson. It's gonna mess me up every time now. Don't get me,
Bijan.
But I think you're about to. Yeah. Are you? Maybe not, Dylan. Okay, good. I'm safe. Bijan. He had 116 yards rushing and also 2 touchdowns. But he did talk about how there were just too many self-inflicting wounds.
It was tough. Obviously we had a lot of self-inflicted wounds that we shouldn't have put on the field. And I know for us, like if we take those off, then we win the game. But yeah, I mean, that's a rivalry game. It doesn't matter what the record is. Like, rivalry games are always, in the battle, in the moment. But, I mean, we didn't finish this one. But obviously, we got to come back and be better for the next one.
Yeah, and Self-inflicted wounds is true. You got to give the Saints credit in some of those situations that they were able to do different things to affect the passer and to break up plays and obviously to get the interception. And we talked to Arch about this yesterday, did we not? I don't know that Kirk played very well. Like, that's actually one of the underlying circumstances, because you look at Kirk and he's been relatively consistent throughout the season and he's carried this team to victory numerous times in late game situations. He got panicky feet. Talked to Arch about it yesterday. I think I said, Arch, you know, can we grade him? And, you know, he kind of gives Kirk like a C+. He got panicky. I think the minute you started getting home, you know, for sacks, I think Kirk felt a little bit uncomfortable, wasn't completely sure what he was seeing at the second level of the defense, and makes a bad throw across the middle to Drake London when Drake got hung up. And I think Greg Olsen talked about it on the broadcast. Shouldn't have made the throw. You know, should have hit Kyle Pitts kind of sitting in the middle of a zone as soon as the linebacker shows any movement to the left. But, you know, Kirk tried to fit it in there. And, talking to Arch, he wasn't a big fan of that.
Remember last week when it – or 2 weeks ago, I guess now, when it felt like they threw like 9 or 10 little swing or dump offs to Bijan. And he went through this game. He didn't get a pass thrown his way until the second half. And the reason I bring that up is because when I thought he struggled a lot of it because of the windows that he had and the tight covers they were playing. And I just didn't understand why at some point, and maybe it goes to Zach Robinson, maybe it's a Kirk and Zach thing, where maybe Kirk could have went and said, hey, maybe let's start building in some run some plays that maybe build in Bijan as a pass catcher. Maybe they needed him in protection too much. I don't know what the reason, yeah. But I'd like to have seen them counter with that, because I think you could have neutralized them a little bit.
Well, you and I talked about it multiple times yesterday, and there were a couple of times throughout the first three quarters where you tried to do that and the ball was tipped. And remember, we talked about yesterday, I don't know how many times there was a tipped ball at the line of scrimmage that Kirk threw, but it felt like it was 4 or 5. Like, it felt like there were just huge, massive tips, because it's so frustrating when you stay on schedule. And let's just say Bijan, you mentioned it, Tiff, he had 180, you know, we had 180 rushing yards as a team on Sunday. Bijan rip off like 6 on first down, and you're thinking, okay, good, it's passing down. Second 4, we'll go pass the ball. And then you're trying to pass it, and the ball is just knocked down. When it would have been an easy completion had the ball just gotten past the line of scrimmage, Bijan makes a move like he always does in the flat and is able to pick up 6, 7, and 8 yards and get the first down. When it's tipped at the line of scrimmage, and it's one of those things that you know that these guys are watching film, because Kirk so many times will check down to Bijan in the left flat. You know they're watching film and they're going, dude, you know what? If you can't get home, got to jump up and tip it. And that's exactly what happened numerous times yesterday. So it's not that I don't think the adjustment was made. It's that I think that the Saints made a nice adjustment as well and said they're going to be trying to check it down over here. If Bijan or even Ray numerous times, if they leak in the flat, you know, you got to be ready to jump up and knock that down. And it happened multiple times.
As the Falcons get set for the Broncos this weekend, and I know, well, today is just Tuesday still, so I know a lot of people still lingering on this loss, but, well, yeah, as I learned that a little bit earlier in the show.
It's got to be disappointing, isn't it?
It was very deflating.
Because you're like, man, 2 more days rest of the week, and obviously you got to work this weekend, but you're like, man.
It was deflating. I'm not going to lie. Okay. we said it was Tuesday. I was like, wait, no.
All right.
It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
I get it. Trust me. They run together sometimes, some weeks.
Yeah.
But we got the injury front. I know that Troy Anderson re-aggravated his knee.
Knee.
Hey, now.
Don't ever want to aggravate that tree.
I'm interested, and Rod kind of talked about it, but I'm interested, Tiff, in what we see from him, if anything, because I did notice that he came back in. However, it was in the kicking game. It was in a punt return formation, and he came back in. But that was when it was late in the game, because Taysom Hill is a personal protector, and so you have to be on your toes when it's 4th and, I don't know, less than
which we've done a great 8 job of this year.
I thought for sure. I noticed it right away in the game, and me and Wes were talking about it. I thought for sure at some any point in the time they were going to run a fake, just with their situation. You know, with the desperation
to
win.
Lose.
Yeah. And they didn't, but I did see him come back in. But it didn't sound like it was as good of news for Taquan Graham and James Smith-Williams. You know, I know that they said that they were concerning, and that worries you. Mike Hughes had a neck injury. He left. I don't think he came back in the game. I know Clark Phillips played in that spot But apparently, Mike Hughes has been cleared, so he's good. So he'll come back. He'll be back this week. So you get him back, which is a big deal. But look, we're already thin up. We're not playing as good as we want to up front, losing guys up front. Now, the good thing is you have Damone Harris, who I think can step in, maybe James Smith-Williams spot. And we've yet to see Brandon Dorlus. So is this the week now with if TQ can't go this week? And it is very – if it's concerning, like Ross said, maybe does the Rook get his first time?
Yeah, I think you're probably looking at that kind of situation because we've talked about Ruka Roro in and out of the lineup with Kentavious Street. And TQ Graham's a good player, man. The first day that we went out to training camp, you kind of wondered what that defensive front would look like, you know, with the new defensive coordinator. And TQ's right out there with the ones, as was James Smith-Williams. Remember, we walked out there and we're like, everybody's checking the roster. Everybody's going, who is that guy? You know, James Smith-Williams didn't expect him to be out there. You also back that up, too, to, you know, the issues that we've had with Lorenzo Carter and, you know, what that means about the depth at that spot. Because we looked a couple of times last week and saw Damone Harris on the interior. And obviously he was out of P-Squad elevations and everything else that comes along with that. But you are dealing with some now health in the front seven, along with J.D. Bertrand having been out and everything else going on that – it was already your thinnest position on the team, and now you start getting nicked up and wondering, you know, kind of what the immediate future is at a couple of those spots.
Yeah, and we did see Khalid Kareem play quite a bit. He was an elevation that they announced on Saturday, and I saw him play quite a bit, a lot more actually than I really expected to see him.
Yeah.
His snap count rate, I had to pull up the number real quick, but honestly, did not expect to see it a ton, and I think he got a decent amount. He only played about 9 snaps, but it felt
it's
like
more than you would have thought. Honestly,
I feel like I saw
most
a lot
people
more
didn't
out
know his
there.
Name before last week.
Yeah.
Who is on the hot seat? Is it a certain QB1 or is it a head coach? We'll give you the latest NFL headlines on the other side of the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Game. We are going in the huddle here on the morning shift. After another lopsided loss for the Cowboys, things seem to be heating up in Dallas with a lot of people. Fans, probably radio hosts, kind of weighing in on the Mike McCarthy situation and whether or not he is, in fact, on the hot seat. Well, Jerry Jones answered that question. He said, I don't believe we'll make a coaching change during this season. So that answers that question. Do you agree with that decision?
Yeah, I don't think anything changes when you make – I don't necessarily think you're – what's the point? Then the organization just kind of gets thrown in disarray. You know, what are you getting from – if you make a coaching change, what are you getting from those coaches necessarily? Some of those guys – I know it's easy to say everybody's coaching for their job, right, or their next job, and that's fine. But now you've got, you know, families to deal with. These guys are dealing with their families. They don't know where they're going to be next year. They're asking questions. It just causes a lot of disarray for the personal lives of everybody involved, players as well. I don't necessarily think that making changes in the middle of the season really does anything unless there is just something really, really bad going on. And I don't think that this team is necessarily lost with Mike McCarthy. I think they're just not very good. They're not coaching them. Maybe they're not putting them in the best situations. They're injured as well. So I'm not really sure what would make of it. I will say that I saw Mike McCarthy's press conference yesterday. And there was sun gleaming in, and they decided to put a shade up.
They
put this thing.
Oh,
what was it?
There
was like a deflector or something.
A reflector that is used when people are shooting people on camera. It can either highlight or you can deflect the light. I think it was a media member, though, that did have that out to keep the sun out of his eyes.
Wow.
So.
I don't know if you guys saw Michael Parsons' comments on the matter either, and he was basically saying that he doesn't – essentially said, I don't feel bad for Mike McCarthy. He can leave and go wherever he wants. I feel guys like Zach Martin. Feel bad for guys like Zach Martin who are on their way out. Those are the kind of guys you want to play for, the kind of guys that have so much sympathy for.
It's the last line that is the more, I think, worst part about McCarthy.
Those are the guys that have so much sympathy and hurt for. Maybe I'm not reading the entire quote.
Yeah,
right
I'll find the entire quote for you. Basically, he mentions, like, those guys have worked harder than McCarthy has. It didn't come off great.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing is we've talked a number of times about optics on this show, and I think a lot of times the frustrating part is too many times in media do you hear a quote during press conference, post game, whatever it is, and you kind of take it, and a lot of times people run with it. But like Michael Parsons has a microphone and a podcast with Bleacher Report. Like,
but
it's
even
not
this
being
was
taken
said at the, in front of his locker. Like this wasn't a twist of his words.
Yeah,
these were his. There was no media. You know, is the enemy kind of thing. That is not the case here.
To me, that speaks to a disconnect because I get it, and I understand. Look, I've been there where guys that are, you know, you want to win for your teammates and you want to win for certain vets and guys that have kind of molded where you're at. At the same time, though, I mean, Mike McCarthy has poured a lot into this team, a lot, right? And you're talking about not only Mike McCarthy, if he were to get let go, you're talking about the entire coaching staff, their families, to your point, and we talk about optics, didn't love the optics. It just seems like there's a disconnect.
I took it, but I don't know, it's weird that I took it in a different way than you, but I simply took it as this is it for these guys. Like he mentioned, he specifically mentioned that Zach Martin could be his last year.
And I think it will be, because I told you before, I don't think he's playing very well, and that's really hard for me to watch.
And I didn't take it as... Well, Mike McCarthy didn't pour enough in. I took it as Mike McCarthy and where he's at in his career will get another shot in some way, shape, or form. This is it for Zach Martin as a player. He probably will never play again.
Sure.
And that's the way I took it. I didn't quite take it as in there's a disconnect and I don't give a crap about Mike McCarthy. You're not saying that, but
I didn't
saying
take
that's,
it as that either. Yeah.
That's not what I took it as.
For him to say I'm not really worried about Mike McCarthy, I don't know. I didn't like the optics of that. I can't imagine where I felt like my coach was going to get fired because of the team's performance.
Well,
I'm saying, nah, he'll land somewhere on his feet.
Yeah.
Like, no, man, like, I don't think that's how this works.
But I saw that as there's a tomorrow in this industry for him. There's not one for Zach Martin. That's just the way I took it.
I don't know that is anybody going to hire Mike McCarthy as a head coach, you think?
Well, I think he might coach again. So I don't know if coaching and head coaching, I mean, he got hired this time. There's been guys that have three or four shots before, whether they're deserved or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, things are just as bleak for the Cowboys rival up in New York with the New York Giants and their quarterback, Daniel Jones. So Coach Brian Daboll was pretty much noncommittal when asked about him remaining the starting quarterback. He said that him and the GM communicate on a daily basis, not just about the quarterback position, but about every position. And he said that there's really good communication and that we'll evaluate everything and decide what we want to do here. So that, again, is not a full-on commitment to Daniel Jones, and it's not a we're not starting him.
Yeah.
So
it's unfortunate the way this season's gone, and I think it was Chad Reuter who's with NFL.com. He was writing, Daniel Jones not the only issue, but he's definitely not part of the upside, right? He's definitely been part of the problem. And right now you're looking at a New York Giants team who – let's call it what it is. They're probably going to have a top five pick, if not a top two or three, the way it's looking. So I think if you are wondering what the future at quarterback is for a guy like Daniel Jones, you might as well kick the tires on something else, because with a pick that high and what you've been the last couple of years, you're not going back to Daniel Jones. You already passed on Jaden Daniels last year, right, when you felt like that he was the guy and you could have made moves to get him, and you didn't. And yet you went back to the well with Daniel Jones. I don't think there's another chapter for this with him.
I just don't know if they could have gotten – I don't know if they really had a shot with in-division trade and that kind of stuff to get up there to Jaden. It almost feels like that quote – and the first thing I – when Tiff read that quote, the first thing I thought was, oh, he's just waiting for him to screw up so bad that he can justify benching a $40 million quarterback. And then I looked at his stat line, and you've lost five straight – and in the against Carolina, he went 22 of 37 for $190 and two picks. And I'm like, maybe that's a bad enough stat line to justify it.
The thing is, I don't know that Daniel Jones, I don't think the good plays aren't good. It's that when the bad plays happen, they are like backbreakers in terms of what he brings. And I know that's got to be frustrating for Brian Daboll. And I think that's why you hear the frustration coming out in his quote.
A lot of frustration, too, around the Bears. When is that organization and their fans not experiencing frustration. It seems like it's been a while. Caleb Williams is going to remain the starting quarterback moving forward, and head coach Matt Eberflus promises changes are coming. Some people have taken the side of the fact that they feel like they should go ahead and bench Caleb Williams, not for his poor play, but because of the poor play around him, is what they're saying, and that is probably in his best interest to try to protect him with a porous line. And then there's the other side that doesn't think he should be benched out of, you know, in his best interest.
Yeah, you're not going to bench Caleb Williams. There's no chance that. And I don't think he's the issue. I think that you can look at a number of other things. To me, this is, if you're a Chicago Bears fan or the coaching staff or whatever, you're looking towards 2025 and just simply hoping that Roma Dunze comes along. Now, I do think they're losing Keenan Allen as a veteran next year, but you'll still have Roma Dunze, DJ Moore, Caleb Williams. Those guys have to come along, and you have to find something that works, because I just think that we almost, like, Caleb Williams came out of the gate stronger than expected, or at least in the mid part of the season so far. And so we kind of adjusted our expectations, and then he went back into rookie mode. And now it's like, well, what happened to that Caleb Williams? I think this is who he was supposed to be all along. So I don't know if it's fair to kind of hold him to the standard of when he was playing well. He's not getting benched. This guy's going to be the quarterback for the Bears for the next 10 years.
I think what's driving all of that talk is the fact that you've seen Bo Nix come along, who the Falcons are going to see this weekend. Jaden Daniels, there's a lot of talk. And then even Drake May up in New England. So you're seeing the play out of those guys.
Yeah.
And then people are wondering, well, why isn't this top draft pick, you know, why aren't things coming to fruition?
And if they're asking, well, are you going to bench him for his own safety? It probably comes with that he was sacked 9 times last week by New England. Now, but what are we doing if, when guys face adversity, we're like, oh, let's just bench him and save him and not let him go through it? I think it's valuable for rookies to go through some adversity on the field. Not, it helps build. How can other guys on that team, younger or old, look to him? And he is I'm pretty sure he wears the captain's logo. And I know that Caleb Williams has shown leadership, but how can they look towards him for leadership when you protect him when you don't protect others? It just doesn't make sense. Let these guys play. If you think that he's at risk, then change the play calling to help him out and don't put him at risk so he continues to learn the game.
And that's what my point was going to be, is about some of these other quarterbacks. Cliff Kingsbury has done awesome things with Jaden Daniels. Bo Nix, they have really molded him into the version he is right now with Sean Payton. So Eberflus and I think the OC is Shane Waldron up there, like they've got to do more to help out of Caleb Williams and really play to his skill set and see what he can do in different situations.
What is the status of Tennessee's quarterback? That's who the Dogs are going to face this weekend. We will give you the news on the other side. We'll also hit a mic'd up.
Yeah, mic'd up. We're going to have an unfortunate conversation, and it was the 8th draft pick heard around the world when we took Michael Penix. Last night, 2 first-round edge rushers got sacks. And so we'll check in on some of those guys and, just kick it around what could have been for the Atlanta Falcons.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. We'll be right back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are rolling along here on the morning shift, and a little more college football for you with Georgia getting set to face Tennessee over the weekend. And there are some questions in regards to Nika Maliava, the Tennessee quarterback, and his health status. And so his coach, Josh Heupel, he said that he was with them yesterday. This was during his weekly press conference yesterday. And so it looks like he'll be good to go. That is what Heupel had to say about the injury report that we had saw ahead of their game last weekend.
Yeah, I think it's obviously imperative that he plays in this game if Tennessee's going to have a shot. It is, you know, College Game Day, SEC Nation, all the above that'll be in town for this, and a massive matchup. And I think if it's not that the backup's not good, I can't remember the backup's name. He was with Josh Heupel at UCF, so he's been around a while, redshirt senior. But if they're going to have a shot, I think Nico kind of has to be the guy. I think he changes what this offense is. And he just has
Gaston
to play.
Gaston Moore is his name.
Gaston Moore, there you go.
Yeah. Gaston.
Gaston.
And Nico dealing with an upper body injury or something.
Yeah, it sounds like a head injury. I think it was concussion-like symptoms. He doesn't play the second half the other day against Mississippi State. So it just it's going to be important, I think, guys, for him to play if they're going to be successful. Now, this is a run-first team, and obviously they're going to try to run the ball against Georgia's front, but have to be able to hit some of these deep shot in Heupel's offense if they're going to have success.
Wasn't it the bad guy's name in Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah.
Gaston.
Gaston.
Is that Gaston?
Yeah.
Well, did I say Gaston like an idiot?
Well, no, I think it probably
I don't
is
know
Gaston.
What I said.
No,
Gaston is. And
Beauty and the Beast. No. What is accurate is how you said it is how I read it earlier. And then when you said it, I said Gaston. Because I just figured that's how you would have said it. You were in France this year.
And I would love nothing more than to go back. No. Again, this news coming out, too, ahead of the SEC mandated injury reports, which are released on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday ahead of conference games.
Yeah, so they might or might not see Gaston, but it looks like Nico.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying his last name. It's not fair to me or him.
Maliava. I had to practice it a bunch when they played Tennessee.
Maliava.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
I was listening to
the effort counts.
I was listening to one of the Sirius shows. I think it was Nicole Auerbach, and she said it. Whoever it was, she said it. I think it was her show, and it just rolled right off her tongue. And I was like, "Huh?
Yeah.
Must be nice."
Do we know the spread on this game? I don't know what it is, but it just seems like
I'm not sure if they're going to have one yet with it being. With it being if him teetering if he's going to play or not.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I bet Missouri last week thinking that Brady Cook was going to play. Somehow Drew Pine led that team to victory, and I was not expecting that. So
it is Georgia minus 8.5.
Yeah, oof.
That's a big line for. It opened at 8.5. It's now up to 10.
Yeah.
Wow. That's weird that it's getting bigger.
Expect a bounce back game, I guess.
Yeah, but this Tennessee defense, and I know we got to get it mic'd up, but this Tennessee defense is pretty good.
Yeah, they're a really good front. Now, I will say, I think that Ole Miss dominated up front, and we talked about it all week last week that Ole Miss had a really good front seven. I don't think Tennessee's far behind. Now, you won't have the sloppy conditions. But I thought at times that Georgia's offensive line got dominated, which you're just not used to seeing. You're just not used to seeing that. Carson Beck, for everything that we've talked about him, running around, scrambling, making bad plays, whatever it is, he was running for his life at times away from this Ole Miss defensive front. So I just think that, if Tennessee's able to do that, they're going to have success. But then again, Nico and this running game, they've got to be able to find a way to do it. Let's hit this mic. Yeah, shout out to John Foy. Also, my guys over at Level Lawns, we're hooking it up with the grass seed in the back. Hopefully get a little sunlight today, get that fescue growing nice and thick the way it has been. So last night I'm watching Monday Night Football, and I'm watching Jared Verse. I don't know if you remember that guy's name, but he was one of the names that popped up in the NFL draft, alongside Dallas Turner, alongside Leatu Latu and Chop Robinson, and all the other edge rushers that were in the first round. Jared Verse last night was a terror. And let me remind you that Teron Armstead, the left tackle from the Miami Dolphins, has the best PFF grade in the NFL as far as left tackles go right now. So it's not like this was him picking on that left tackle from Dallas. No, he's picking on one of the best ones in the NFL. Jared Verse right now at 4.5 sacks. Now, why do I bring this up? Because, 6 months ago when we were on the station, we were talking about the Falcons taking Michael Penix at number 8 overall and the fact that you passed on all these other edge rushers because you felt good about what you had in-house. Now, you tried to trade up, did you not, Bo? Tried to trade back up, possibly get an edge rusher.
Yeah,
you also made a run at Danielle Hunter at one point last offseason, but you didn't get there.
And you traded for a pass rusher. He just hasn't gotten home.
Let me read off some of these stats for some of these rookie edge guys, and let's just kick it around whether or not you guys would do it over again. Because I know that when it happened, we came in here the following day, and it wasn't a good feeling. You did not want to draft a backup quarterback at 8th overall and have to see your D-line suffer for the next couple of years or your corners. So Jared Verse right now, 4.5 sacks. He's your highest rated edge as far as rookies go on PFF. Chop Robinson came on slow, 2 sacks in his last 2 games. He right now is your number 2 ranked rookie edge in this class. Leatu Latu, 2 sacks, 18 tackles, 7 quarterback hits for the Indianapolis Colts. He's been a pretty good player, a little bit more of a run defender. And then as you slide back, you get into the third round, Caden's brother, Jonah Ellis, couple of sacks on this year. Now, I say all these sack numbers, Verse 4.5, Chop Robinson 2 in his last 2 games, Latu has 2 sacks in the year, Jonah Ellis 2 sacks, to tell you that would rank all those guys would rank second on the team. Jared Verse would rank first on the team. Grady has 2.5. Matthew Judon, who you traded the third rounder for, has 1.5. I don't want to have revisionist history, but watching Jared Verse last night, it occurred to me that he would have been a guy that you'd love to have. Let me just say this before we get going. Dallas Turner, who we all thought was going to be that guy, hasn't been that guy. He hasn't been that guy. He dealt with a knee injury earlier in the year. I think he had a sack in week one. He has barely played for the last month in Minnesota. So I think that's fair to bring up, guys. But watching Jared Verse last night, I just got a little bit of the warm fuzzies watching him play, man. And I thought he is going against Teron Armstead, and he is dealing right now.
Yeah, just I know Falcons. I know Falcons fans is long for the day when when we have a year in and year out a John Abraham again here, and I you know that's the last guy that we had here that year in and year out you could depend on was going to get
by
you.
Himself was going to get home.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not sure if I as a fan then. And even you know, even covering the team and traveling, appreciated it as good as he was. Because I remember when the team went out and added Ray Edwards, well, we got to get more pass rush. We got to get more. We had it. We just needed more.
Right.
Of course, we went to the guy that had played opposite of Jared Allen.
Yeah,
and ended up being more than a banana hammock model.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's about the only thing he was good for in the city. Him and his little calendar, but. It just feels like we're cursed at that point. It's like, should we call it the curse of Ray Edwards?
No, not ready to go there. But hopefully, I'm hoping it doesn't turn out to be the curse of the missed first round draft picks.
Well, look,
that's all I'm pointing to. Jared Verse looked good last night.
I was as critical of not drafting an edge rusher or a pass rusher in any way, shape, or form, or a trench player as anyone, and so much to the fact that I was called a hater. And negative and all that stuff. And I think it's great to talk about, but it doesn't change who we pick. And fortunately and unfortunately, that pick will be judged in 3 to 4 years from now. And we got to hope for the best. And look, I think the fact that Penix is your future quarterback and he's learning behind a guy like Kirk Cousins is really good.
I do want to point out before we go to break, because I know we'll get some wake-up calls, there are a number of these guys that are in the top 100. I think you have six rookie edge rushers in the top 100. The Falcons currently have two guys in top 100. Arnold Abakady is your highest rated at 47, I believe.
But what's the production?
Well, and that counts too, but you know, playing your scheme and being a run defender and everything else. We try to highlight JSW and Abakady and Judon for those things. So I think that's something to take into account as well.
If you can relate to Mike, you can call us on the wake-up call at 404-726-0929. Or we had a spirited debate earlier on Kirby Smart's take on Jake Pope and his celebration after their loss. You can give us a call. Again, wake-up call is next, 404-726-0929. We'll be right back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.